So I'm in my grandmother's house, and my grandma's house in Woodland, California is this one staple of time and space where it seems to have not changed very much. You know, it's all very familiar to me. One time in the early 2000s, she changed her wallpaper, and I felt like I had been betrayed or something, you know. Her house never really changes. So I'm in my grandma's house when all of a sudden, like, the kitchen window just gets kicked in. They hear shattering glass. I don't understand what's happening. I'm freaked out. Suddenly, there's all these people just, like, breaking into the house, violently breaking the door down, like, crashing in through windows, coming from the garage door, the front door, the kitchen windows, the back door, all of the spaces. They're wearing ski masks, and they're really, like, fast and agile, kind of like ninjas, basically. I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my god, what is happening? I run down the hallway. In my grandmother's house, her hallway has a door, so I slam the hallway door behind me, I lock it, I run into her bedroom, lock that door, run into her bathroom, lock that door, and I'm looking at the space between the toilet and the wall, and I think, oh my god, I just need a portal to open right here next to the toilet in my grandma's bathroom. And I'm thinking so hard, like, okay, come on. And I start to see it going, and I'm like, this is going really slow. And then I just start hearing these, like, knocking, pounding on the door, and I'm having so much anxiety. And then I realize, like, wait, hold on. Why are there ninjas breaking into my grandmother's house? And why am I looking for a portal to open next to my grandma's toilet and my grandpa's old, dusty, Old Spice, like, gift set that looks like a big whale? Like, this is weird, you know? Even for me, it's weird. And I just have a second of lucidity, and I go, oh, okay, I'm not awake. This isn't real. This is a dream. And the second that I realized that, I stopped feeling scared or anxious. I didn't need the portal anymore. I was just like, wow, that's crazy. You can kind of do anything in your dream. Like, physics doesn't matter. There's no such thing as what is possible or not possible. So I open the door to the bathroom. There's no one there. It's empty. And this is a place I've been thousands of times, you know, since I was born. So, and nothing really changes here. So somehow my brain has cataloged, like, every fiber of the carpet and the wood paneling of their bedroom accent wall, the giant dusty rose plastic fan that hangs above their bed. And by fan, I mean like a, you know, Southern Belle, like waving your face with a little gust of air kind of fan, not like a big, okay, anyway, this is not important. Okay, so I have, like, every detail perfectly memorized somehow. And the difference between a memory and a lucid dream is, a memory, you could imagine what things feel like. You can put yourself back there to a point, but there's always a point where you realize you're not there, that you're just squishing your eyes together and you're trying to think about it or whatever it is, you know, you're trying to hold the image, but you're not there. In a dream, in a lucid dream, you know completely that it is a fabrication of your mind. But when you touch things, they feel like a real thing, even though you might as well just be touching the own, your, you know, the gross pink clay of your own brain squiggles. So I'm like tripping out. Like, honestly, lucid dreaming, hands down, number one psychedelic experience. You're just like, wow, this is real and not real. I was like tripping out. I was stoned AF in my grandma's room, basically. But it wasn't a real room. I was in my grandma's room in my head in my sleep. So I'm like, okay, well, eventually you're like, I get it. I'm in my grandma's room. This is weird because it's her room, but it's not. Maybe I should get out of here and see what the rest of the world is up to out there. Like, what will be, you know? So I go outside and I'm like, this is so hilarious. It just looks exactly like their street. And for some reason, I get completely naked. And I was like, I just started yelling. I was like, hey, who's out here? Nobody responded. And no, there's not like some M. Night Shyamalan twist where I was just actually high at my grandparents' house. This is a genuine lucid dream. I knew it the whole time. And no one noticed me because I was alone in my own mind. So then I just started walking up the sidewalk. I'm like, all right, what else is here? And somehow I had clothes on again. It's just like they just sort of appeared. And I noticed this park that's down the street from my grandparents' house was having like sort of an open air bazaar, which would never normally happen. But I was like, oh, cool. Like there's like a farmer's market, flea market kind of thing. What's up? I started looking around. Just, you know, just old stuff, like nothing that was so amazing or brilliant. It was remarkably boring, you know, just regular stuff. This is a town I've gone to like 1,000 garage sales in, so maybe it was a compiling of different yard sales I had gone to my entire life. You know, like old boots, like stuff that I wouldn't want. Looking around, there's, you know, some disinterested baby boomers working the stands, trying to say hi. People are like, oh, hi, whatever. Like, no one was like, oh, hello, welcome to your dream. No one was like the Cheshire Cat of my dream world, you know? No one gave me a knowingly little twinkle, you know? No jolly elf was like, good thing you woke up to your dream experience. Now let's go to the second part. There was nothing like that. It was just wandering around. And then eventually I ended up waking up. So that was one of my first lucid dreams, and that was at 16. And it was cool, you know. I liked it, but I also felt like it was not the best use of my time, because there's an you have a crazy amount of power, you know. Like I said, before I even realized that I was dreaming, I was trying to make a portal with my mind next to my grandmother's toilet with total confidence that it was gonna work, and it started to. And that was the part that I was like, wait, hold on, like, why is this even, what the hell, how is this possible? So that's what kind of woke me up. So this brings a lot of ideas into mind, like, of course, like, what is your perceived reality? Like, how can you even be cognizant of such a thing as being awake in a dream and touching everything around you and knowing it feels the same as when you're in your waking life, but knowing somehow that it isn't? What the hell? This is the this is the borders of madness, you know? How far out are you gonna go? And what is the discerning factors in your mind that knows the difference? This is a thing that I contemplate a lot when I'm trying to explain how reading tarot really works. And what I mean by that is tarot to me is more than the benign memorization of 78 cards and their applications. There's a second sight, you know? There's something you have to see between the lines. And to me, sometimes it can be very visual, but it's almost impossible to really describe what that looks like. And this is something that's always fascinated me. The closest I can get to explaining the vision of that and understanding having the ability to distinguish which is what, where, why, is understanding the facilities of your own mind in recognizing something like a memory of something that you read, or something that happened to you personally, something that you watched on TV, something that you imagined or dreamed. Like, how can your mind make the difference, you know? These are a lot of stupid questions, by the way, but these small differences to me are very fascinating. What is the exact nuance, and how does that operating system work? And what does it really look like? You can picture it in your mind, but where is the image coming from? Where's the outline of it? Where is it going to? Like, how does it end? You know, does it just disappear? Like, what's the editing tricks there? Like, how does it all work? We have a multi-screen player in our, up in our noodle. Like, there's so many questions, you know? So I want to talk about the moon card. And the dream that I just described to you, to me, is very much an experience of the moon card for many reasons. The moon card is, I think most obviously, represents night and the subconscious. So dreaming is, of course, like a heavy connotation there when you pull the moon card. As is madness, lunacy, you know, and also femininity. So the moon is often representing the feminine principle. Also, it's the feminine energy cycle and the cycle of her own uterus, the waxing and waning of it, and how that creates a hormonal and energetic structure for a woman. That also, please don't bust my chops. When I'm talking about principles of femininity, it's not a gender politic thing. Like, I just want to explain just for a second that when talking about magic, when talking about tarot, when talking about mythology and psychology, there is a concept of the feminine form that has its own principalities to it, and those have specific designs around it, which is important to grasp and understand, to explain. And that is different than personal gender. And of course, I'm not discounting anyone is a woman or not who has or doesn't have the feminine flow cycles of uterine experience. So I just want to put that out as a disclaimer. Sorry I sounded so agitated at the beginning of explaining that, but I feel like I was in flow, and then I was like, wait a minute, there's this whole other thing that's happening. So I should just say it as a disclaimer. Hopefully that makes sense. Okay, so the feminine waxing and waning is about... Well, you know, like, a lot of us who experience this sort of fluxing of energies of, like, wow, I feel full and full of energy, and now I don't. Now I feel kind of low energetically, and then it's going to rise again. I mean, everyone has these cycles, but this exists beyond gender, of course. But this is a feminine principle. And it exists within all people. So that's another thing about the tarot. There's a strobing of man, woman, like feminine, masculine, but all of these are little dioramas we all must step through and understand and master as we go on to enlightenment. They're beyond the exclusivity of one gender or not, who is the zero, the fool that is stepping through all of these stories. So, but this is a very feminine principle because of also, like I said before about the uterus, this also represents ancestry, and it represents your where you come from. So, just imagine like the ocean below the moon is an infinite womb, creating all life in which all life has sprung from, and each little creature jumping out of the infinite ocean of primordial life carries with it a little tiny bit of ocean within it, and as they keep moving and they produce a new little tiny replica of themselves, they give that ocean water to the next, you know, the next of kin. And that water over time has become this ancient rusty rivers in our veins, this blood, you know. And so for me to have my first lucid dream at my grandmother's house when I wasn't at my grandmother's house in reality, but I think it's interesting that there's a connection to ancestry, like really hard when you talk about the moon card. So it was interesting to me, just a detail that I was at my grandmother's house. So another thing here is the moon card, when it comes up for someone, I think of this card often as like the dark night of the soul. It doesn't have to be bad exactly, but I would say call on your ancestors for protection, because sometimes when you're walking on your path, which is earth element, it's solid, you know, even if it's coarse or craggy, you still take for granted that it will hold you, that the gravity of it, that it will support your weight, and even if it's a difficult trek, you understand how to walk, you know how to go through that, you get it. But when suddenly, you, without even realizing it, you're at the end of the path and in earth element, and you're suddenly immersed in water, it is, sometimes we don't even know it. We don't even know it when we're in the water path. So this can make someone feel like they're crazy. So this gets tricky, because when you see a moon card, when I see a moon card pull up for someone, sometimes I think it means that someone is having such an intensely dense emotional experience, they literally can't feel gravity. Like, they can't feel the weight of their own body against the ground. They feel like they're sort of suspended in this merciless wave, you know. This could be like an emotional experience, this could be addiction experience, this could be grief, this could be mental health issues, it could be a lot of stuff. And it doesn't mean bad on you for going through it. We all have to experience this at some point for whatever reasons that bring us there. And at that point, it doesn't really do anybody any good to point the finger on like the past or how you got there. You're there. So the best you can do is learn how to swim. So this brings to mind one of my favorite quotes by Joseph Campbell, which is, "The crackpot is drowning in the same waters the mystic is swimming in." And he says this at a lecture he was asked to give about schizophrenia. And he says, when he was asked to do this, he was like, I am not a psychologist. Like, what do I know about schizophrenia? And the more he contemplates it, in all his studies, I don't know if you're familiar with Joseph Campbell, but he's a beautiful storyteller, man. He's like the Mr. Rogers of occultism or something. He takes all of these different myths and stories from around the world, from many cultures and times, and he finds the common tie. And through this, you can kind of see this little macrocosm of how the human soul looks for evolution in all of these ways that might seem dramatically different at face value, but really at heart are not. So, what he was talking about in this lecture was how, in his studies, he finds that when in some cultures, and you can use your mind to imagine whatever those cultures are. P.S. This is a secret test to see how racist you are. I'm just kidding. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just messing with you. Sorry. Okay. sorry. I'm just such a brat. Okay. So whatever culture you're imagining, where there are shamanistic figures, and that has an appropriate place within and respected place within a society. When a young person starts experiencing strange and confusing and even scary visions, they are they're brought to a shaman. And the shaman, you know, all kinds of people go to a shaman, whatever. But sometimes the shaman will take in a new person as an apprentice when they're having an especially wild time psychologically, and teach them how to deal with this in a way that not only strengthens their inner steel, but also from this they can retrieve human medicine on how to help people with like basically lesser problems. Sometimes not everyone is having like the most psychologically tumultuous experience, but people have hard times all the time. Life sucks. So for someone to come out of deep, terrible experiences and learn that personal mastery, they're able to have a little leg up in like maybe offering help to others. So he was saying how Western society doesn't really have the proper facility to that, you know? So that's an interesting thing there. And I think, to me, I feel this is a huge problem with our society. And I don't like to throw that around, you know? Like, I think it's annoying and not helpful to be like, the problem with our society is, like, shut up. Like, do something about it or, like, stop bitching. Like, that's me turning into an elderly woman before your eyes, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like it's a worthless criticism if you don't understand completely how to follow through with an action you can take as a human being to start alleviating some of that problem, you know? So I do feel that our society, because we are We all are crazy AF. Like, I've never met a person where I'm like, wow, so normal, good. You know, it's not a banishment of your legitimacy to say that you're a nutcase. Like, everyone's figuring it out. We're all trying. We're all suffering. We all do weird stuff. It's not to belittle anyone out there. It's to say we're in solidarity with this. But because a lot of the archetypal forces that we value in our society are almost like sociopathic, I think that sometimes the more sensitive and strange souls are considered problematic because we don't know what use they have. You know, we don't know what they can offer society or how they contribute to the whole, except for what we see, which is, you know, someone who at worst is a total pariah and at best is a, you know, is just like a weirdo, you know? So it's hard to find. And then sometimes there's that little cherry on top situation where you're like, this person is an artist. This person is a musician. There's like that one diamond in the rough, like rock star seat for every like gazillion crackpots, you know? So it's hard to understand how to embrace your own madness and how to go into strange and polluted, uncharted parts of your own mind without feeling the fear that you might become unhinged and therefore not be useful to contributing to the whole, which I believe is one of the deepest desires of the human soul, is to fill the whole, to feel the wholeness of all of us. Because I believe that we are all one, and we are fractured into these many bodies to experience the oneness as separates, so that we actually can feel it and we know. So it's important to be an individual, and being all one does not negate the, you know, the preciousness of the individual, because that is the sort of like paradigm of experiencing the oneness. And that's kind of how I think tarot works, to be honest. So people will pull cards and it will perfectly say, and or I'll just know they're going to pull a certain card, and they always do, you know, and you say like, well, how does this work? This is so uncanny. And I'm like, well, it just does. But I think that it's a second when we're letting ourselves remember in a secret way that we are all one. I'm one with this deck of cards, this table, this stranger sitting across from me. We're all one. And I have to keep being an individual separate from the oneness. Wink, wink. So I don't want to like let the veil slip too much, but I'm going to go ahead and let it subconsciously slip enough that I can pull the card that tells the one who is me, just enough for that second. Have I lost you? I don't know. So one thing I got to say about the moon card, when somebody pulls it, there's a little fear that comes up. You know, the night is dark and full of terrors. I stole that from Game of Thrones. But it's true, you know, the night is scary. It's scary to be left into the reflections of your subconscious. It's scary to have an experience that feels threatening to your reality. But there's ways to navigate through those waters, and it cannot be the same methods in which you like walk on the ground, because if you try that, you will drown. In the same way that someone who keeps saying that they're not crazy is like the craziest person, do you know what I mean? So if you're pulling the moon card for whatever reason, I would say make yourself the most safe little bubble boy protection zone to be alone with your thoughts. I would also say this is a really good time to detox and to call on your ancestors to protect you, to guide you. And that might sound very superstitious, counterintuitive, or pointless to some of you. I've even heard some people say that they have no interest in that because they don't even like their own parents or grandparents. And, like, you know who voted for who. Like, why would I listen to my ancestors? It's not about small differences. It's about the fiber of your DNA and your physical and spiritual and emotional makeup and its origin. It's about you being anchored through time and space to the core of the world and through that innately all people. Because your ancestors are many, many, many people. And it goes both ways. So whenever you're out to sea, you know, if you feel lost and adrift in strange waters, learning and embracing that you are in these strange waters, and it is a bit of an odyssey, and to anchor yourself with, like, I say prayers to ancestors, you know, and understanding a new way of being and how to swim through it, making yourself feel, like, protected, I think is important. I would say just, like, buckle up and, like, try to get through it as best you can. And be very gentle with yourself, you know. And again and again and again, once you recognize that you're in the deep waters, to not feel that you have to move the same as if everything was fine and you're walking, because that's not how you swim. So maybe this is all very far out there and theoretical. So let me try to conjure up a story of being in deep waters where I was in the moon. Okay, let me try to think of the last time I was up in the moon. Probably on this very podcast. I was having a real touch of the PTSD because one of my roommates was stalking me in my house. It was horrible, creepy, terrible, bad. Horrible, creepy, terrible, bad, times 50. I was having, like, a full-on emotional, psychological meltdown. But as a 30-something-year-old adult, I kept it to myself for the most part, except for the times I broadcasted my panic attacks. It was horrible. I was, like, going to work, doing my stuff, trying to function as best I could, coming home, having a debilitating panic attack where I felt like I was leaving my body. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. And I realized, I was like, okay, you're having a crazy time. This is what's happening. This is what you know about your particular crazy time. So use that to swim. And know that when you're falling down having a panic attack, it's a nervous system reaction. Learn more about that. Keep swimming through it. You know? Know that you also have to maintain a functional life at some degree so you can keep steering the ship and you don't crash it into the rocks. So it took a lot of, it took some time, and, like, it, you know, I ended up telling my roommates how I felt, and all of my roommates were like, yeah, we don't like it either. Like, we feel really creeped out by this person. Why don't we all ask him to leave? So we asked her to leave, and she left. And I slowly recovered from the emotional turmoil that it took on me. Knowing that I was going through dark waters, and that even if we, like, got up the courage to ask her to leave, that she would be the kind of butthole that would be like, I'm leaving at the very end of the month, because I already paid my rent, you know, so it's not, so I knew that no matter what, like, I had to be in in the waters for a certain amount of time, even though you could see the shore. So what I'm saying is understanding the madness that I felt and not forsaking that I'm like, oh, I'm a crazy person now. Great. I'm damned. But just surrendering to like, yeah, I have some mental issues. I have some emotional, psychological, insane in the membrane problems. And I probably will have to deal with these things for the rest of my life. And the best I could do is make my environment as protected, as comfortable as I can with what I'm provided. And if such a situation arises, what's the best I can do to give myself the freedom to swim through it? Because trying to act normal is going to make me worse off. Like, I'm going to probably just end up flipping out, or like, flipping out could be whatever. It could be self-harm. It could be breaking down emotionally. It could be a catalyst for addiction issues or erratic behaviors, you know? So understanding with perfect acceptance and love and lucidity around what's happening with you and deciding how to move through it is going to be really paramount to your health as an individual. Because there's no way to live a life where you anticipate only things going right. That never happens. It just doesn't happen. In fact, the turmoil is kind of something that we almost crave in a messed up way. You know, like we watch all these terrible shows where like someone's like getting a gun in the face and we're like, oh my god, I can't believe it. But it's like, why are we watching this? You know, like it's okay. It's okay that things get messed up sometimes, and it's appropriate, and I won't say it's good, because it's bad, but good and bad exist on this world in our lives, and it's part of the ride, and it's better to know that and know how to roll with it than feeling like you're just like knocked off your booster seat every time, you know, there's a bump in the road. So I'm trying to open up as a human being and share with you all of my personal and weird experiences and as they relate to the tarot. And hopefully this will give you a better understanding of the cards themselves, of life itself, and also maybe how you can pull a card and interpret it in new and abstract ways for your own experiences as you learn to read more or keep reading. Because as I find as a reader, as I keep pulling and pulling, like every single time I pull a card, it's like it's a familiar story, like I know where I'm starting, but it always has these different things going on. Like the story never ends. So, the moon, you know, it shares half the time with the sun, and somehow it's like, seems like kind of an underdog, you know. The sun is such like an alpha, like we sometimes don't even acknowledge how much madness is running through us each evening, because we usually forget by the time we wake up. So half the time we are spending in a deep unconscious state of being, and who knows what we're doing in there. So I would say if you're pulling the moon card, do as much as you can to dream journal. Pay attention to weird signs, even if they seem insane. Just let it be. Give yourself a lot of love and give yourself a condition to thrive. And don't try to force yourself to be more normal or better, because that never works. And that will help you drown. So give yourself a break. Okay, I'm sending you so much love and inner power, and hopefully I can imagine your heart opening to accepting yourself as you are in this moment and whatever moment follows. And good night.